Welcome to Brooke USA on the Road. Our mission at Brooke USA is to significantly improve the welfare of working horses, donkeys, and mules, and the people they serve throughout Asia, Africa, the Middle East, the Americas, and the Caribbean by raising funds and responsibly directing them to the areas of greatest need. Brooke USA connects private philanthropists with their passion for helping relieve the suffering of working equines and their owners. In each podcast episode, you'll hear a report from one of our board members on the current initiatives for our organization. You'll also enjoy updates from our Brooke USA ambassadors, who range from top-level international riders to best-selling authors. I'm your host, Julianne Neal. In this episode, you'll have the opportunity to learn more about Brooke USA, a nonprofit, board-led organization dedicated to alleviating the suffering of working equines and the people they serve in the developing world. This episode of Brooke USA on the Road is entitled Brooke USA, About the Future, and includes a powerhouse trio with founding board member Dwayne Hildreth, Brooke USA Ambassador Katie Jackson, and Chief Executive Officer Emily Marquez-Doolin. Dwayne Hildreth can be described by those who know him best as a loyal friend, consummate professional, and an energy giver with a deep and passionate love for family, animals, and music. He is also known in some circles as a super connector who thrives on opportunities to leverage his vast and varied network of contacts, relationship-building skills, and creative mindset to help bring ideas and concepts to life. He is a 30-year veteran of Nike Incorporated with a talent in understanding the big picture and is adept at finding the necessary resources to maintain a successful business. After losing her leg to cancer in 2015, Katie Jackson is now an international para-equestrian dressage competitor. Digging deep, Katie found what brought her the most joy in life, horses. She has used this passion to triumph in the face of overwhelming adversity. Katie was named as first alternate for the 2018 Tryon World Equestrian Games U.S. Para-Equestrian Team, and has represented Team USA in numerous National Cup competitions. She is a USDF National Champion and a USDF Bronze and Silver Medalist. Dwayne and Katie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Absolutely.
I had to admit, when I realized both of you are from Texas and it was going to be such a great fit to talk, I thought, you know, I hear people talk about Texas all the time and how big it is. And what is your biggest, what's the best thing, Katie, about living in Texas for you?
You know, for me, it's really the people. I just love how friendly everyone is. And, you know, they make you feel right at home. I can remember I was in Los Angeles, actually, before moving here, I was finishing my residency and the first time going to a Home Depot and was looking for something. And this gentleman was like, can I help you with something, ma'am? What do you need? And I looked over at him and was like, oh, actually, yes, that would be great. And it was just, you know, just a difference in community and a way of being. And you know, you're driving down the road and if you're in a truck and they're in a truck, everybody waves at each other. And it's just, it's really a comforting kind of sense of home and my home away from home now. I grew up in Southern Oregon, but I think there's a lot of similarities. And so cool. I love it here.
Well, that was one of the other quotes. If you go to Lowe's and somebody offers to help you and they don't even work there, then you know you're in Texas.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't even remember what I was looking at, but he just happened to sweep. Little gentleman, and he was just happened to be in the same aisle and could tell I wasn't sure which one to pick of whatever it was. So yeah, no, everybody's really, really friendly.
Awesome. So. Well, Dwayne, what about you? What do you love about Texas?
Well, I can mimic some of what Katie just said, but you know, originally I'm from Louisiana. I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and there's a lot of Southern comfort going on there too as well. But I migrated here, you know, right after college to live with a relative of mine and get ready to see what my career move was going to be. And I stayed for a while. And obviously, you know, we'll talk about it later. But, you know, after I joined Nike, I've lived in tons of different states and cities and areas of the United States. But I have to say, Texas has always become you know, my favorite place to live because it's wide open. And even with the major cities, you know, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, and Houston, there's vast differences within that same state. All friendly, all nice places to be, but you can get a different experience everywhere you go in Texas. And obviously, and I'm sure Katie would agree, if you're going to love horses, outside of Kentucky, Texas is one of the best places to be.
Oh, it sounds like it. And we're going to get into your equestrian background in a little bit too, Dwayne, but it sounds to me like the perfect place for both of you guys to be. Yeah. So I'm really excited to speak with you. Dwayne is a board member for Brook USA, and Katie is an ambassador. And so different roles within the organization, but both so important. So Dwayne, can we start with you? I hear that you were very sought after. Emily Doolin said, we were looking for something specific when we sought Dwayne out. So Dwayne, what do you think they were looking for when they found you?
Well, you know, to begin with, I don't know that Brooke, that Emily and the team knew that I existed. I happened to be informed about Brooke, you say, through a friend of mine, a mutual friend, Tammy Tappan, who's an equestrian at the Tryon Equestrian Center in Carolina. And my interest was sparked really by, you know, when the story was told about why Brook USC does what it does and why they support what they support. And that just resonated to me as an equestrian. But, you know, as we began to have conversations and develop that relationship, it was apparent that, you know, first and foremost, there was an obvious gap in the network, and Texas was that gap. So they'd done some research and done some studies to figure out, you know, what's the number of people in active equestrians that live in Texas? How can we reach them? And, you know, it was just seemed to be the need there. And so it just so happens that the synergies grew together in terms of what I brought to the table, both as an enthusiast and a competitor. And then also, you know, with my background in marketing sales, to kind of bridge some relationships to hopefully bring Brook USA to Texas. So put it quickly, succinctly, it was really just bringing Brook to Brook USA to Texas. And that's kind of my main focus. So I think that's what they were looking for.
Well, I have to tell you, Tammy Tappan is also a friend. My partner, Bruce, and I met Tammy at WEG two years ago when they were at World
Fair. Wow, small World. Okay.
Yes, he is an amazing person, amazing artist. The paintings that she did of the different disciplines, she gifted us, and I just love them.
Like, she's quite the person.
Yes, she is. So I'm so glad that you met up with Brook USA through Tammy and have continued that relationship. Katie, how about you? How did you first get involved as an ambassador?
So it was actually at the World Equestrian Games as well. So I knew about Brook USA, but getting to meet the entire team when I was there just really, you know, enabled me to learn more about the organization and really, you know, what their role is as far as, you know, helping working equines and helping the animals that we all love so much. And it really resonated with me. They had this amazing booth set up where you could use the virtual reality goggles, and it literally transported you into the brick kilns of India. And it just blew my mind. I mean, just absolutely blew my mind. It's something that you know about, but when you see it and then you hear the impacts of what, you know, what these animals do for these families and, you know, the work that they're required to do, it really, was something I knew I wanted to be more involved with.
So I do want to find out a little bit about both of your backgrounds as equestrians. So Dwayne, let's start with you, if you don't mind. Can you tell us, I hear that you're into Western riding, and I know that's sort of a big general topic, and there are different, you know, reining and roping and all kinds of things. So what is it that you enjoy doing the most?
Well, for me, I guess I have to start back when I was a kid. I always fancied myself a cowboy and would worry my parents to death to stop at every ranch along the road just to stop and gaze at horses. And my sisters would tease me all the way. And, you know, we'd go in front of all these different department stores where they had the little electronic horses in front of the stores, and I'd get on and ride. And we couldn't go to a state fair without me. I just always thought I was a cowboy. And then my grandparents bought me my first little Shetland pony when I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And I rode that thing till my feet drug the ground, almost till I was a senior in college. And so when he finally passed, you know, I kind of just kind of left. That was, you know, I had to go on and pursue opportunities. But my heart, you know, I was always wanting to be around horses. I don't know why. I do know my grandmother told me later on that her father actually was a equestrian, if you will, and he actually was killed on a horse. He ran under a limb in a storm, and it hit him in the head and killed him. But she said he loved that horse. I don't know if it came from that or not, but for me, I've just always loved being around him. I will tell you that, and Katie, I talked about this last night too. There's a kindred kind of spirit that goes along with horses. You either get it or you don't. And I think most people are intimidated by them because they are so intuitive, and that intuitiveness is something that draws me to them. Like, you know, just their perception, their senses. They know your feeling when you walk in the barn. They know what you're thinking before you think it. And there's something that draws me to them for that. They're just so intelligent, so versatile. And from specific to quarter horses, when you talk about versatility, those animals, really, that's what this country was built on, the back of those animals. And if you think about everything that they did for us as a people, as a developing nation. And to me, there's just something about that that I love. So specific to Western, I kind of got off track there, but specific to Western, you know, go back to the cowboy thing. I've enjoyed the cutting, you know, the reining, the riding fast through the pastures. I just love that. And as an athlete through high school and college, you know, just being able to see those powerful animals with so much agility, I kind of align with that. So that's my love for quarter horses. But I also, and I've visited Kentucky Park, and my mother used to be a dean, associate dean up at the University of Lexington, Kentucky. And so I would go and visit her, and she had some people on the board that she worked with. So I got to visit some of those thoroughbred farms as well. And those are magnificent horses too. It just so happens that I happen to like the quarter horse. So.
Well, they're pretty special too, you know. Yeah. I had a friend who had cutting horses a decade ago, and he would let me sit on them. And I'm have a dressage background. And so just sitting on his well-trained cutting horses, man, I'd almost fall off because they're doing this and that. They know where to go, and I didn't do a thing.
Right.
But boy, they're quick. Yeah, so yeah. You have to have a good seat to be able Absolutely. To do that. So Absolutely. Good for you. So, Katie, how about you? What is your background as an equestrian? What do you do?
Well, I think there's a lot of parallels, actually, with Dwayne and I, as far as I was that horse crazy kiddo as well. And I don't know that my parents have still figured out where I got it from. You know, both of my granddads had horses through farming and they were the ones that kind of helped me, embrace the horsey addiction, I guess you could say. I begged and pleaded, and finally my parents gave in and gave me a riding lesson for my 6th birthday, and I was hooked. And then I had a little Welsh pony that I did the same. That little pony and I went for trail rides, and we actually did some barrel racing back in the day. And when my legs could literally wrap around him, I taught him to drive. And so I have had horses in my life from 6 on, and came to the sport of dressage through a very naughty pony who was getting
best,
away with, you know, figured out her little girl couldn't stop her when she decided it was time to go to the barn. And a family friend introduced me to dressage, and through exploring different sports, that's the one that I love the beauty and the power. And I think I'm a glutton for punishment too on the detail side of it, and that it is really, really hard. So through school and that, found ways to keep horses in my life. And after finishing up school and settling here in Austin, came back to riding. As an adult amateur, did some little bit of competing here and there. I was more focused on building my business and my career. I'm a general dentist in my other life. And was doing that. But the horses always were my grounding force. And to leave the office and be able to go to the barn, it didn't matter how stressful my day was. By the time I walked away from the barn, I was in a good place. And so they've always been that for me. And then life changed pretty abruptly for me in 2015 with a diagnosis of cancer. And made some big changes in my life as far as practicing and things from the career standpoint. But, the horses really at that point became my lifeline and helped me through some huge hurdles as far as, of course, the diagnosis and what that meant. And as part of my cancer, becoming an above knee amputee. And just being able to go to the barn and be around the horses and know too that some way, shape, or form I was going to get back on and was going to do dressage again really helped me push through. And since then have gotten to do things I would have never imagined with competing and riding. I was able to learn international level dressage and had the honor of representing our team as the traveling first alternate for the World Equestrian Games, which was just mind blowing on so many levels. I learned so much about myself and horses and learning to compete at that level and am continuing on. And the horses have given me really a new sense of drive and a passion. And, you know, I never imagined that being a Paralympian could be something that I could be working towards. And that's my new goal. So it's been great. And yeah, they're like Dwayne was saying, I mean, the horses are amazing as far as just, they just know, and they have this sense about, you know, they can be going with the trainer and just up and, you know, having that level of fire and I can get on and they take care of me. It's amazing. So.
They really do. And you talk about it being the other life and having, you know, the dentistry business and everything. And Dwayne, you mentioned the Nike and everything else that you've done in the corporate world. I mean, it's like we have this other side and it's hard to know which one is the more important one to me, so.
But, I think we all know which one's the most important.
I think you're right. But, you know, Dwayne, you do have that background. Is that part of what helps you in your role as a board member? What has your experience been on the board and what are you proud of? What are the accomplishments that you all have made?
Well, you know, I'll start by saying that I'm not quite a year in yet. And then obviously, you know, when I first started, you know, we had some pretty lofty goals as we were coming off a very successful year as Brook USA. And both from a financial standpoint in terms of raising funds and to getting those funds to the much needed animals and their caretakers. Then obviously, you know, COVID and all the other things that have happened have, you know, without question been a challenge. But through it all, I think we've been able to sustain and still be able to deliver to some of these poor countries and their animals. For me, when I first came on, one of the things was, okay, get grounded, find out where the opportunities are, and then begin to look for other ambassadors like Katie and other people and supporters of it to get the message of Brook USA out there. One of the things that I've done when I first came is I had to vet the existing list because there were lists of potential donors and previous donors that lived in Texas, but Texas is big. So we had to go through zip codes, myself and Emily, which was an arduous task, but we did it to try to figure out, okay, where is the best bang for the buck, so to speak. That was one of the things we've done. And so letters have gone out from that exercise and we're just beginning to get to some points where we're getting some response. Secondly, and I'm really excited about this because, you know, there's always events going on in Texas, as Katie can attest to, from all different disciplines. So one of my goals is, as a competitor myself, when I go to these shows, I'm sitting and talking to people, trying to get network. And that's, you know, yes, for my skills that I'm bridging over from Nike, my career really encompassed sales, marketing, and supply chain. So all three of those, I think, are building blocks that help me over on the Brook USA side. So particularly on biz development and developing relationships. So what I've been able to do within this short period that I've been in the equestrian world is really garner relationships, a lot of it via social media, believe it or not. Just meeting people and then meeting them at shows, starting those relationships, finding out what these people are involved in, and then trying to find the right opportunity to bring USA into the conversation. So For example, the AQHA, the American Quarter Horse Association, is hosting the World Show in Oklahoma City. And this is an organization that was started in the early 70s. And there's a show going on right now, and I'm going to go up there tomorrow, but there's a show going on between November 2nd and 21st. It's the largest of its kind, where the American Quarter Horse Association really showcases the best. It's the World Show. So people have all year been preparing for this show, but the disciplines are vast. And you'd be surprised that the quarter horses also do dressage. And that was something that was new to me. So you talk about trail riding, you talk about ranch and cutting and sorting and those types of things. Yes. But there's also dressage, and there's several different things that these horses do. So I'm excited to go there, meet some people. And my goal, you know, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but it's my goal. I really would like Brook USA to have some presence at next year's show.
Be it a tent. Say that.
I'm going to talk to Katie's probably like, what? But I'm going to talk to her.
I love it.
My brother came last night. Maybe she and I can work together to figure out how we can get presence at that show. I mean, there's over 2,100 exhibitors and there's 7,500 entries. And that's just all of those people in one place, you know, to do that. And these people have, you know, deep financial pockets, and they also have the same fire that Katie and I have around horses, right? So how do we bridge that gap and bring some synergy there? So those are the types of things that I'm looking to do.
Well, that's amazing, because I think of the crowd and the WEG, I keep coming back to Tryon, but just having the presence that Brook USA evidently had there, and you had the tent and you had people coming in and out. There was a huge storm and all kinds of other problems that kind of limited that audience. But what you're talking about right there is a totally different crowd and different way of reaching a bunch of people that, like you said, have that same passion for horses, just in a different discipline or in several different disciplines. Mm-hmm. So that shows me that what I read about you and your ability to look at the big picture in that type of setting, you've already started making those connections and putting things together. So that's amazing. So Katie, as an ambassador, what has been your experience? How have you been a part of things for very long? When did you come on board?
I came on board in 2018, and it's been so much fun. I was telling Dwayne, I just all the time wish I could be doing more. Right after coming on board, I was able to help out and raise over $1,200 through the Giving Tuesday that December to be helping, and also got to attend one of the main fundraisers for Brook USA, which is the Sunset Polo and White party that's held annually in Wellington, and which was so much fun. They have an amazing silent auction that I was able to have some of my sponsors donate products to, and then just being there, they had these wonderful orange sashes for us as ambassadors, and just walking around getting to meet and connect with some of the donors and really kind of embrace and share the message of, you know, why I love Brook USA and getting to hopefully, you know, just share that energy and get more people excited about it has been a lot of fun.
Well, it sounds to me like they weren't able to do the Sunset Polo and White Party, but a lot of people that I talked to it just have wonderful things to say about it.
I was looking forward to that one.
I know, me too. But maybe next year. I know everything's virtual now, but the auction of all of those items that would have been there, I believe they're having virtually right now from mid-October through end of November. So, and speaking of initiatives and funding and Giving Tuesday, there's a new one right now out called The Power of One.
Absolutely.
And Dwayne, if you could talk a little bit about that, what do you see as the strength of the Power of One initiative?
Well, first and foremost, the Power of One is most certainly our most ambitious campaign right now, with a goal of raising $1 million this year. And, you know, with this notion that we acknowledge that one person's donation can change the world. And so it kicked off October 15th, and it's really singularly, like I said, the most ambitious campaign we have. And the funds primarily will be used to help Brook continue to lead the country and the world in support of equine and the people that they serve. And so right now, that's where the majority of our focus is. And so it's, again, about spreading the word of Brook USA. And every dollar counts, particularly during now. And so I would say that initiative right now is the main thing that we're working on. There's a lot of branches of other work that we're doing, but recognizing that funding is our number one goal, and with that lead icon being the power of one. So that's where the focus is. And so, you know, but between that and kind of expanding the advisory council in the DFW area, those are the two things that for me specifically are must haves in order to make this thing continue to work. So, and if you don't mind me kind of just dropping in that anyone who's interested in helping right now, I mean, we have a website, it's www.brookusa.org, and you can email the staff and someone will be available to answer any questions. The website itself is pretty explanatory and very in-depth in terms of the information it provides. However, there's just tons of stuff going on and you can get involved in a variety of ways. But I would say that, you know, the advisory council and the power of one or two of those main cogs that's going to make the wheel continue to work.
Well, and you're right. The website is so comprehensive. As I started just kind of looking at the basics in the menu, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't realize all the different opportunities to find out. There are web chats that are speaking about specific places, the trip to Guatemala, or the, like we've mentioned, the brick kilns in India, right. And all the different, the Women for Donkeys, and I think it's in Kenya.
Yes.
And so a lot of that international focus and emphasis. But then, too, there are some things more recently that I've noticed are back here in the United States with the storms and wildfires and everything else. So, Katie, could you speak a little bit about anything that you know of that would be, I mean, for you guys in Texas, I guess I'm in the South also. And so the storms start coming up. I look at the weather and I'm already thinking, are we going to have evacuees coming in? So are there things like that go on that Brook USA has helped with here in the U.S.?
There are. And that's something that I really love about the organization, too, and this team, and just how dynamic and, you know, their response and ability to think outside the box. And even though they have such an amazing impact internationally, that they've really also brought the support to us here at home, and some of the major need that has come about in the last few years because of natural disasters. Some of the wildfires that, I mean, they continue to devastate California, but as those really started ramping up, they went into action and have raised over $100,000 that have gone to helping with, you know, finding temporary shelter and nutrition and welfare for the animals. Through those fires, through some of the hurricanes that have come through. And yeah, right here in Texas, you know, we've been a big part of some of those rescue missions. And I know Dwayne has personally gone to help just recently, which is incredible. Wow. And even with COVID and some of the impacts that a lot of the really amazing organizations that are working to help animals around our country, they've started a grant program and have been able to fund over 25 organizations with relief grants just here recently to make sure that these organizations are able to do what they need to do and stay afloat. And it's really been incredible to learn and watch and see how, you know, with the dollars that are coming in and with the donations and just like the power of one, that, you know, one donation can impact so many people and have, you know, such a huge, huge impact. I love that it is, you know, we're helping across the globe. But then, you know, organizations like LOPE right here in Texas and others that are, you know, right here at home that also need it, especially right now.
For more exciting content, tune in to Winnie Tales, Horse Stories, Pony Legends, and Unicorn Yarns, featuring the work of international equine clinician Bruce Anderson. You'll find these podcasts and more at equusfilmfestival.net or on any of your favorite podcast directories.
Well, and you mentioned the pandemic, and we really haven't talked a whole lot about that, but what is next for you, Katie, as far as competition and riding and all, and has the pandemic changed any of that?
It's been, this year was definitely unique. I was training in Florida for the winter season as things started to come to a head, and actually made a pretty quick I don't want to say escape, but left Florida a lot quicker than I was planning to, with worries of the border closing and not being able to get home. So the season ended a lot more quickly than I was hoping. But it's been in some ways lovely to be home and be here in Texas. And we moved into a new house and I got to be here to help a lot more with that. And things did stop for a while. The barns were closed. You know, we weren't able to go, and the horses were completely cared for and healthy and that, but there wasn't any riding or training going on for a bit. But thankfully things are back up and rolling and gearing up towards competition. I was just sharing with Dwayne that there might be a new four-legged member of the family coming on board. So
wow,
you guys are the first to know. So hopefully I haven't jinxed myself. But I'm really excited for this opportunity. And it would mean getting back in the show ring. And the next big international competition is in January in Florida. So that's my goal right now. So
very exciting. Cool. Well, we'll definitely be following along to see how that goes.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Dwayne, how about you? Has the pandemic changed your riding experiences? Do you board at home? Do you board somewhere else? How has it been for you?
Yeah, so like I was telling Katie last night, my life has kind of been in flux too. So after recently having left Nike after 30 years and my position, the last position I had with them was in Austin. Just as of last Friday, I also moved. So I now live in Denton, Texas, which is just north of Dallas. I just moved here, so I have stuff everywhere. My horses are at a buddy's house just north of Houston in a community called Montgomery, Conroe. He is a reining cow horse trainer, and he boards and stables and trains for other clients. But he and I are friends, so partnered on a horse, which he rides in competition. And then I have another horse that I ride. And so I've been fortunate that he keeps the horses, and we have an arrangement where, you know, I go when I can to ride. But I'm really itching to get to a point to where I can have my own horses on my own place. So I just recently purchased 30 acres close here to Denton, and I'm going to start planning and building my ranch here in the next few months. So my hope is to have by April have bought my horses to my place, and then I can begin riding here and getting with some trainers around here. And there's tons of reining cow, horse, and ranch ranches around this area. So that's pretty much what I, from a personal standpoint, what I'd like to be able to do, you know, by April.
So you have that planning background. So have you already mapped out, I want this and this and this in the barn, or are you kind of going to like?
I have a plan, and then my wallet has a plan. I'm trying to align those two, Julianne, but it's, you know, you go to some of these ranches and you go, oh my God, you know, but it's, you know, I think if I plan it right, I can get pretty much what I want to get. I don't aspire to be a trainer. You know, I just want to have my place to where I can ride, have people come over and ride, and have the facilities to be able to accommodate, you know, the practice and the work that they need to do. And, you know, when it just goes back to, I want to wake up and look at my horses. That's what it comes down to. So
that's wonderful. That's the best.
The pandemic also impacted the Western world. I am a member of SHOT. If you're not familiar with it, it's the Stock Horse of Texas. Love this organization, because if you're a beginner, whatever background, you can go into a SHOT event. Your horse doesn't have to be some registered, you know, horse with papers. But what they do is focus on the core disciplines of horsemanship through trail, through pleasure, through reining, and through cow horse. So you have the ability, and you have to perform reining patterns to show, I hate to use the word control, but that you've mastered the skills of going through gates with the horse. And my experience is not common. I mean, I got thrown into this thing. I didn't grow up with, you know, with horses, you know, all the way through and have class and stuff. I just met my friend. He was like, okay, you're an athlete, go do it. I'm not quite sure I would recommend that for anybody else, because I've hit the dirt more times than I care to say. But I'm now having to go back and learn things I probably should have learned years ago. It just, my life just didn't work like that. So now I'm working at it. And it's hyper speed, because I'm in competition now with these people that have been riding for years. And my expectations is to be able to be that good. And my friend goes, you got a lot of learning to do. That's not how it works. So I say that to say that SHOT has offered me the ability to be able to get in at the ground level with less pressure, yet compete with people who've been doing it for years. So that's one of the organizations that I'm, and I said that to say that in these shows, we missed probably half of the shows because of the pandemic.
Right.
We had to reschedule and push things out. So our season is coming to a close and we start back up again in January.
Right. Will one of those horses, will your horse or the one that you co-own be in the Oklahoma event coming up? Are you working towards something like that?
They won't. And mostly because of preparation or lack thereof. I mean, you have to qualify for these shows, but now that I know, and now that I'm kind of in the cadence, I'm goal oriented. So I have to be honest with you. I want to win a buckle. It's just one in my life. And I'm gonna take that thing and hang it on a plaque. You know, I've told myself I'm not wearing a Western belt until I get a buckle. I just wear a regular belt. I'm not going to do it. And that is my goal at some level, to be able to win a buckle. And so for me, I have to go back and kind of learn the fundamentals, because I really want to be good at this. And yes, I'd like to compete in that. The stallion that I have did compete in the futurity last year, and we came 2 points from making it to the finals. And so, but right now he's doing really good in the Hackmore. And so he's qualified for World next year. So yes.
You'll be there. Yeah. Well, that'll be exciting. And I can't wait to follow that as well. Okay. So I'm going to ask both of you the same thing. What do each of you see next for Brook USA? And so Katie, what do you think the organization has to come? You've mentioned some funding initiatives and things that you've done with Giving Tuesday. What do you see next for yourself with the organization?
You know, I am really excited about getting to meet Dwayne and getting to hopefully just really get the word out and really share more about what this organization has to offer, as far as not only helping the working equines and the animals that we love, but the impact that it makes on the families that depend on them and the communities, and even what we're doing here in the States, like I had mentioned before. So hopefully just getting to, you know, if it's just talking to people one-on-one or traveling, now that we're able to do a little bit more of that carefully, traveling to events and sharing, you know, my perspective and the reasons that I'm a part of the organization, and just getting people excited and hopefully, you know, connecting with people that will feel the same need to help and finding those donors for Brook USA. So I know that, I mean, the team is incredible and their wheels are constantly turning about ways that we can have either virtual events or online events, and just being as much a part of those as I can. Just sharing however I can.
That sounds fantastic. And Dwayne, how about you? What do you see next for the organization?
So I think for me, I have to eat the elephant one bite at a time, right? Mm-hmm. The opportunities at Brook USA are massive in scope. I know where I was brought on, and so I need to focus on what that opportunity is. Texas is huge. Thereby, you know, opportunity is huge. So for me, you know, ditto to what Katie said, the first thing would be to align with her strategically on, I need to expand the base here in Texas for people like Katie to help bring the message of Brook USA to Texas. That's my number one goal. Mm-hmm. And it's not about the quantity of ambassadors, but just the right ones. I have some in mind, but it'd be interesting to see from her background experiences, what are the expectations of what type of people I should be looking for, or we should be looking for, to fill that void, or to add to what we're currently doing. So that's one of the things. Secondly, I think from a business development standpoint, again, showing up at events, people don't know you exist. You have to kind of go out there and find them. But it has to be the right thing. Partnerships, you just can't just go willy-nilly and, hey, let me tell you about Brook. You have to really kind of, to get the right types of partnership for sustainability. Finally, I have this thing that I've just coined for myself, is deliver on Texas. That's what I was brought here to do. And so that's kind of my inner mantra, just deliver on Texas. And that's wide in scope when you start to think about it. But I believe that the board and Brook USA in general would expect that there'd be some penetration, right? Some penetration, some support from additional potential donors. and really trying to blanket Texas, or at least start to begin to see from a Western perspective how we can bring that segment of the population into what we're doing holistically. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I have to just respond to that, because you talk about your reach and bringing in Texas, but I can tell already from the things that you've said, your reach is far greater than just Texas. So that's pretty special and pretty impressive to me. And I do have one last question for you, Duane. If you could ask three things or two or three things of our listeners for them to do, what would you ask if you could have them do something, you know, other than just the funding thing? I know that's part of it too, but are there other things that you would ask of them?
Absolutely. And I would say that the majority of the people who are listening to the podcast or who are involved with horses that, you know, probably have some awareness of, you know, what the horse means to our development and to particularly as you look at our focus on these other third world countries. So the first thing I would ask them to do is to become informed, because you can't really get behind something unless you really know what it is and have a draw to it. So I would say, I'd ask that the people go to our website, read about Brook USA, find out how we came to be, and then really look into why we do what we do. Because, you know, it's fun for us to sit here and talk about riding horses for pleasure and they bring us such joy, but there are actually countries that use these horses for end use. And hard to believe, but it's true. That's how they make their living. And as such, to have the education, funding, and support to keep those families moving, I just think it's a good thing. So the more you're informed about what it is that the organization stands for, I think the more apt you are to get behind and support. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I can't emphasize it enough, it's just the power of one, and that, which is kind of bridges to the first point, which is the simplest way to do it is one person makes a difference, and there's tons of ways to do it. And, you know, we have the resources for you to go and find out about how to do that. So those two things. And then third, just any creative ideas that one person may have. Again, that you don't have to be a horse person. I mean, I think it's just really more about having compassion about it is what we do. But any creative ideas or events or things that may not be discovered through what we're doing, the efforts that we're making, we welcome those ideas. And, you know, it's all about, you know, getting behind the cause for greater good. So those are the three things, I think.
Well, I can tell you that between the two of you and with all the other folks that I've spoken to, I think the future is pretty bright for Brook USA because of your work. So I have to thank you. Thank you for speaking with me today. But more importantly, thank you for all that you're both doing for Brook USA.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
100 million working horses, donkeys, and mules support 600 million of the world's poorest people. They are the sole source of income for many families through the backbreaking labor of their animals. Unfortunately, the majority of these working equines are suffering from chronic welfare issues and premature death, nearly all of which are preventable. Brook USA provides funding for scientifically proven, practical, and sustainable equine welfare programs throughout the developing world. We work primarily through Brook, the world's largest international equine welfare charity, which reaches 2 million working equines annually, benefiting 12 million people who depend on them. When we fund training for people and veterinary interventions for working equines, Brook USA effectively prevents and eases the suffering of these animals and ensures better livelihoods for people, now and for generations to come. Projects recently funded by Brook USA include construction of permanent water troughs in Ethiopia, continuing education for veterinarians in Senegal, training for Maasai women who own donkeys in Kenya, veterinary interventions in Pakistan, disease prevention and training for animal health care workers in India, improved nutrition for animals in Guatemala, and so much more. We also recently funded emergency relief programs for equine victims of natural disasters in the U.S. and Puerto Rico. Please help us fund even more solutions to the world's most challenging equine welfare problems.
Emily Doolin, the CEO of Brook USA, is an accomplished leader and corporate administrator with over 20 years of experience in all aspects of marketing and outreach. In her 4 years as the driving force behind Brook USA's initiatives, she has quadrupled the organization's revenue. She's responsible for developing and coordinating the strategic fundraising and grassroots activism direction of Brook USA, taking the lead in advising the senior management team and board of directors on all fundraising and advocacy matters.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I'm really, really excited about this one. We've been talking about you for a while on the podcast, and all of the ambassadors, all of the board members, everybody knows Emily, of course. And so we'll talk a little bit later about that. But I just have to say, first of all, congratulations on all of the accomplishments that you have in your role at Brook USA, because you've been the driving force behind so much the change. You're bringing decades of experience to this role. You've restructured, and there's a really large emphasis on fundraising. So it's pretty obvious to me why they wanted you to take the role, but what was it that drew you to this organization, to Brook USA?
Well, first, Julianne, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this for me and for us, because the Brook USA on the Road podcast has given us an opportunity to tell everyone what we do, and in an in-depth manner, right? It's not every day that you're able to talk for an hour or for half an hour about what you do. So thank you. First thing. I think if you look at my career, what you'll find is that I have gone back and forth between animal welfare and human health. And those are my two passions. So when you look at Brook USA, it does bring together animals and humans. So it's the perfect place for me. I get to work with my two passions, right? So that's what attracted me to them when they called me. So I'm a recruit, which is wonderful. And I also have this little thing where I see myself as the voice of those who cannot speak, you know, whether they're animals, the ill, the elderly, or children. So again, when they contacted me for this job, I said, oh, this is the perfect match for me. And I couldn't be happier 5 years later. It is an amazing place because I get to help animals and I get to help people at the same time. And more importantly, I get to share with others the interrelationship that exists between the animal and the human. And I don't think we all know that, especially in the developing world. When one suffers, so does the other. And when one thrives, so does the other. And as people, you know, in the developing world, people that depend on these working equines for the most basic and routine chores, from traveling miles to a river to get water, to taking kids to school, which is far, far away, or even selling produce at market, which will give them their meager living of, what, $2 a day? So these animals are pivotal to people's livelihoods, you know? And just to add this funny twist for you, just so you know, In many, many developing countries across the world and in many, many remote villages in the developing world, working equines transport electoral ballots and return them to the capital to be counted. So It's as far as that.
Wow. So that's pretty, pretty timely, you know.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
definitely. Well, so had you heard of Brook USA before they called? Did you know already, or did someone kind of have to explain to you what the organization did at that point?
So I knew a little bit about it because my mother was British, and like any British woman who loves animals, she knew about Brook. Okay, so it's part of a heritage that comes across the way. I mean, Brook has been around since 1934. So yes, I knew a little bit about it, but not enough. But certainly I knew the name. Mm-hmm. I knew it was reputable.
Right, definitely, definitely. Well, and then you grew up in Venezuela. You have this extensive international background. You've been professional. Your professional life was in South Florida. You're bilingual. So you have all of this. You've been exposed to a number of cultures throughout your professional career. Has that influenced your work with Brook USA? Has it been a help?
Oh, I would say absolutely. When I was, I was raised in the capital in Caracas, which is very different from the rest of the country. But my father happened to be a Venezuelan politician and a senator. So campaigning across the country was part of what we did. So I grew up in an environment where we traveled everywhere. I never thought that those memories would help me understand how people in the developing world rely on their animals, horses, donkeys, and mules to get the work done. In Venezuela, it's in agriculture and in transporting goods from villages to cities. And it's been very, very useful. I don't know. And since my mother was British, so I was seeing this with my dad, but my mother was British. So she took a keen interest, as all Brits do, in what was happening with the animals, you know? Uh-huh. And as I said, she did know about Brooke. So I wasn't surprised. And has it helped me? Absolutely. When we went to Guatemala, I think I mentioned this to you. When we went to Guatemala, I expected to see exactly what I saw. And I traveled with a photographer who was also Venezuelan. And as we're driving around in these mountainous terrains, and I mean, no streets, no expressways, no roads, and it was raining, it was crazy. He would tell me, doesn't this remind you of home? You know what? Yeah, it did. Yeah. The fact that I speak Spanish also helped, because I was able to communicate with indigenous populations who live high up in the mountains, and they were telling me stories that I don't think if you didn't speak the language, you would understand. So I think it made a lot of sense, and it just makes it so much easier for me to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that I can use my other languages one day, because I'm not only bilingual. I have a degree. So I have a bachelor's degree in foreign languages, specifically in Romance languages. So I do dabble in French and Portuguese and Italian. So I'm hoping that I can use that one day.
Well, and you also, there's a Trinidad background there too, because right. We talked about that before. And so when were you in Trinidad?
So my father, as I told you, was a politician. So he was in the Senate, but at one point in time, he became an ambassador and was sent over to Guyana, which, as you know, is next to Venezuela, and then moved to Trinidad and then moved to Jamaica. So I also had the opportunity of working throughout the Caribbean, and you see work in equines all over the Caribbean as well.
Right. Well, and my partner, Bruce, had talked about growing up in Trinidad, and they had a cocoa and coffee estate. And so the donkeys that they had first, and then later the horses off the track, helped him up and down the hill, took his dad up to work every day or whatever. And so for a lot of Americans who aren't used to that, I'm imagining for when you take these trips and take the ambassadors or the board members, whoever, that it's a bit of a culture shock. So having you there to be able to provide a level of trust for the people that you're dealing with, you know?
Yeah. I think it's enlightening to people who come from the US to see what the livelihoods are and how these animals live. And why it's impossible to bring vehicles and mechanized machinery to those areas. They're high up in the mountains. There are no roads. Maintenance becomes impossible. It's very expensive. A car can cost, you know, $5,000-$6,000. A donkey costs $200. So it kind of tells you, this is why there can be no change over time. Well, hopefully there will be, but there can be no change immediately. The only thing that we can do is improve the lives of these animals. And people really want to learn. I don't know if I told you that. People really, really want to learn to do it better, because they want to work in equine that's going to help their home.
Right.
So they're eager to learn. And that is so satisfying, is the word. It's so satisfying to see that everybody wants to learn and that they go to the classes. You know, when in Guatemala or in India, you know, we arrive, the entire village comes out to listen to us talk.
That's amazing. Americans are not always welcomed in that same way. So for the people who do have these animals to be that receptive to you, that's a testament to the relationship that Brooke USA and the Brooke already have with people.
Absolutely.
There. And I can't remember which one of your ambassadors told me that, you know, the response on social media, sometimes you see a picture of a thin donkey, and the response is not always good until you realize that the man standing beside him is just as thin. You know, it's not that somebody doesn't want to know the right thing to do. Sometimes they just can't. So,
and I think that I saw more of that in India than I saw anywhere else, because you're talking about people working in the brick kilns. There's bonded slavery. There's child labor. So there's issues that really the equines live in the same exact situation as their owners.
People.
Many of them sleep in the same home, inside the home, to avoid that it will be stolen or hurt. Yes. So we're looking at people who live exactly the same as their animals. And, right. And what we need to do is elevate both lives because they affect each other, right?
Exactly. And now you've been involved in animal welfare for quite some time. You have a background with the Humane Society. You work with Adopt-A-Pet in Miami. How did you begin that journey? How did you get into the animal welfare side of things initially?
Oh, so that's actually, I've always been an animal person. My house has always been filled with lizards, birds, cats, you know, anything that we could find was brought home, snakes. I have everything in my house. Always loved them. I've never had a horse. I must confess, I've never had a horse.
Yet.
I don't think my husband would be too happy, but yeah, right. Not had a horse yet. So it was, I had worked, I'm going to tell you, as vice president of marketing and sales for an animal theme park in Miami, Florida. It's actually quite well known. It's called Jungle Island. Uh-huh. And I had been there. And I think that that's what came to the realization. This is what I want to do for a living. I want to work with animals. And from there, I went to work for another nonprofit. And then I was recruited by a reporter for the Miami Herald who said, Emily, this is a perfect job for you. And they recruited me at the Humane Society to go work there. I was there 7 years. It's a long time. And that gave me the opportunity to see a whole different dimension. Anything from, you know, animal cruelty cases that are horrific. And I find them intolerable in our country, which is a developed country. You know, petty taxes for homeless animal care. I got to attend a slew of conferences. So I think I became more educated on the plight of animals as I got more and more involved. And after that, I actually left. I went to work at the American Cancer Society and the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which kind of brought to my attention the suffering of humans. And I think that seeing both sufferings, both animals and human suffering, is really what kind of made my job at Brook USA so perfect. Because you have to have a feeling for both. There's a tendency in humane societies to say, oh, well, we only care about the animal. And there's a tendency in others to say, we only care about the humans. But we actually care about both. Because as I said, when one suffers, so does the other. And when one thrives, so does the other. That's the beauty of what we do. We improve both.
Right. Well, and when you came in, evidently there was a pretty large transformation. So did you kind of step in and have a plan? Did you do the strategic planning thing and figure it all out in advance and you knew where you were going? Or did you kind of take a while? And what was your transformation process?
Well, I love the word transformation process. I think I'm going to keep that one if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
I love the word. It's a cool name. Honestly, when I started, the only thing I knew was that we needed to grow this tiny organization into a force that could help other organizations across the country. But we couldn't have done it without the support of our volunteers. And there's a story to that, if you want to hear it. There's a story to that.
Yeah.
I started in November 2015. And quite honestly, I knew nothing about the equestrian world. So I needed to learn quickly and I needed a few mentors. So what we had, a few top-notch equestrians as ambassadors that were helping us kind of build awareness for the organization. And the most important one there is a name that you will remember because you have already interviewed, and that's Margaret Dupre, our founding Brook USA ambassadors. I sat down with her and I said, help. And her answer was, I'm going to help you. I'm going to introduce you to the movers and shakers of Wellington in the equestrian world. I'm going to host a party for Brook USA at my house.
Okay.
So we had a fabulous party. We had about 80 to 90 people show up. Among them, our Brook USA ambassador, Nick Roldan, who, as you know, is a polo player, uh-huh. and Catherine Knubb, who also came to the party. The two of them got to talking and 20 minutes later came up to me and said, we have an idea. We want to hold a party in Wellington that includes polo. And we want to call it Brook USA Sunset Polo and White Party, which in year one attracted 1,000 people and kind of established Brook USA in Wellington.
Yeah.
But you know that Wellington is actually the winter capital of the world.
Yeah.
Once the season is over, people go home. Mm-hmm. So they remembered us wherever they went. Okay. So we started creating these pockets of friends throughout the country. So that was the beginning. And since then, Catherine has become a member of the board of directors. She will be our chair next year, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have expanded our work into Tryon, Southern Pines, Aiken, San Francisco, Ocala, Lexington, and Louisville. And hopefully Texas.
Yes, I was going to say Texas.
So I would say, you know, if it hadn't have been for Margaret Dupre and Catherine Canab and Nick Roldan, we wouldn't have had that first impetus to succeed, right? And since then, we just mushroomed into, you know, I think what I consider one of the most respected equine nonprofits in the country.
Absolutely. And now everywhere I go, the people I talk to know who Brook USA is. So what a, like you said, transformation. So how did you manage to get all the right people on the bus, as they say? You've got, I mean, your staff, every time I'm around you guys, there's just this energy that you're coming up with these creative things. So between you, Kendall, and Amanda, how did you manage to get them on board, first of all, and decide that they were the right fit for you?
Oh, my goodness. I wish I could take credit for that, but you're absolutely right. I am surrounded by the most extraordinary staff members. And I think it's just been a matter of luck. Somebody has been looking over me and saying, you know, we're going to put in front of you the most amazing people. So you're right. We have Amanda Miller-Kelly, who is our major gifts officer, and she is an extremely talented fundraiser, a fundraising generalist, as we like to call them. And then Kendall Beer, who is our donor relations manager and, oh, I'm sorry, donor relations officer. And she, everything she touches turns to gold. It's one of those things, right? You can just look at our website or look at our social media. It is beautiful.
It's dynamic.
It's beautiful. It's dynamic. It communicates well. I mean, so I just wish I could take credit for their work. I just think I have been very lucky to find them. They are not only well-rounded professionals, but they're also fun to be around. I love every single day I spend with them, and I love them to death. I really do. They make my life happy.
Well, I can tell. And I mean, I won't go into any of the stories that I hear that
no,
y'all
please
have,
don't.
But it's wonderful that you have a good time while you're doing good things. So what is your thought on the initiatives that you've all come up with as far as like your funding things? And would you be able to do all of this in person, if we weren't in a pandemic, would that virtual setup that you have now still be in effect? Or do you think you'd do more in-person things?
So as a team, we have always worked virtually, but there's certain conditions that we have put in place over the last 5 years that make us very, very effective. And I think one of them is we maintain an open door policy, which means that no matter at what time or when one calls, the phone will be answered. Unless you're in a meeting, then you just text back and say, in a meeting. So it's the same thing. If you were in an office, I call it the pop-in syndrome. You would just pop in somebody's office and say, hey, I have a question.
Yeah.
Well, we do the same.
Gotcha.
It's no different. Our calendars are available, so you can always check out our calendar, see what we're doing, and do that pop-in call. Hey, Emily, can I ask you a question? Or, you know, what I do in the mornings, the first thing I do is I check on them. I call them and say, hey, what's up? What you doing? Good morning. So, and at least for an hour a day, we all get on the phone. Now Teams, or it's actually Teams Zoom. It used to be Skype, but we all get on Teams and we work together.
Great.
And that may be as simple as just having them on there and I'm writing and we're just seeing each other. Because it's important to have that
connect
together as a team, right? But what's different right now, I'm going to tell you, I travel 50% of the time normally because I like to connect with people. It's very difficult to ask for money over the phone. It's much easier to do it in person. That's
absolutely
the truth.
Yeah.
And I love our donors. They're so fun, and just sitting down, talking to them and holding events is fun. So we miss that, all of us.
Sure. Well, and you speak of events. So I've been hearing about the Sunset Polo and White Party. I've been hearing about the Power of One initiative. You just had a virtual film premiere event online. I mean, you've got some really creative things. There's an auction. So which of those have been the most effective in bringing funding in, but also bringing attention to the organization?
So look, without a doubt, I would say Brook USA Sunset Polo and White Party is extraordinary. And it's led by Catherine Kana, one of our board members. Mm-hmm. It raises over $300,000 for us a year, is extremely successful, but we also connect with so many new people each year. Fun event, which I don't know if you've heard about, is called Divertimentos and Dressage. Yes. That takes place in Aiken. I shouldn't say this in front of Catherine, but that happens to be my favorite event because it's dressage live to the Spartanburg Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yes.
I am telling you that it's something unseen. And that's led by one of our volunteers. Her name is Sally Frick, and she lives in what's called the Foothills, which is, I guess, Tryon, Campobello, that area, right?
Right.
It is amazing. Another successful program that we did was called Horse Heroes, and it was back in 2004 to commemorate World War I. We raised $1 million from that by just celebrating the role of horses in our lives.
Wow.
And you're right. Most recently, we hosted Films for a Cause with the premiere of Hope's Legacy on the Equus Film Channel. It's like a Netflix for equestrians. That is really cool.
Yeah.
We're hosting Brook USA on the road with you.
Well, exactly. We love it. And just trying to get the attention out. But what I like about the things you just mentioned is you've got the Divertimentos is dressage. You've had a setup at the World Equestrian Games that was, you know, all of the different disciplines. Mm-hmm. And you're hopefully moving out into Texas with some more Western things. So you're approaching a very a varied audience of horse people, but this is also reaching out to people who are not equestrians at all. So you've been really creative in the ways that you've done things. I think that's pretty special.
You know, one of our board members, his name is Mark Boussolet, and I hope you get to meet him. Mm-hmm. He actually is not a horsey guy, but he is so concerned with female empowerment and working with communities to help them out of poverty, that this resonated with him. So you don't necessarily have to be an equestrian. You just have to be concerned with others, I think. And that's what makes it really special, right?
Right.
And let's talk about the Power of One.
Definitely. Yes. So you launched it with the film event, and now mm-hmm. this is going for a year. What has been the response so far?
So our goal is to raise $1 million in 1 year. We have already raised a bit over $250,000. So we are a quarter there, which is great news.
And it's only been a couple of weeks. That's amazing. Holy gosh.
But you know what? This campaign is so special and so dear because it recognizes the value of every single donation, no matter the size, or of every single donor is thanked for what they do. You know, the message is, every donation can help one equine, one person, or one community. We all have that power, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And to make that donation, I have to make my pitch. To make a donation to Brook USA, please visit www.brookusa.org or text ORANGE to 71760. Any amount is welcome. And this is what's most important. Remember that I told you at the beginning that we can make in the life a difference in the life of a person because these people are making under $2 a day.
That is so.
Donation counts.
That blows my mind. I can't even imagine it.
It's poverty.
And yes. And it's so we've talked about the relationship that you have internationally with the sister organization, the Brook. But you've also branched into the United States quite a bit with all the recent storms or ongoing storms, I should say, because every time the Weather Channel comes on, there's a new one coming in, or the wildfires in California. How did you decide to bring that support home and what the response been to that?
You know, I think our board has been very, very savvy in understanding that when there is a crisis at home, we need to respond to that. Kind of that old concept of charity begins at home. Mm-hmm. So when any disaster arises, we're right there. Whether it's the hurricanes 2 years ago in Louisiana, Florida, Texas, and Puerto Rico, or now the wildfires in California, Oregon, and Washington, or even COVID-19, you know, we're a U.S.-based organization. We got to do what's right for our own country. I just wanted to let you know that we just donated $40,000 in micro grants to organizations throughout the U.S. to help them during COVID-19, because there's been a huge surge in horse abandonment, mm-hmm. lack of feed. You know, people don't have the means right. to care and veterinary care. So we're very, very proud of what we've been able to do to help.
That's special. It really is.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to hear it, but it's a special thing to be able to do that. So let's talk about future. First of all, what's next for you? I mean, you're going to be with Brook USA for a long time. I can see it. I foresee it. But what else do you think is next for you besides having your own horse? We've already know that.
I think if I get a horse, it's going to be a mini. Okay, or a mini donkey. My passion is mini donkeys.
I love it. Love it.
I don't think that my neighborhood would allow it, but they may think it's a big dog. I don't know.
That's right.
Because my German Shepherd weighs 106 pounds. So I'm hoping that
it would fit right in. It would fit right
in. I'm hoping. You know what? You're right. I hope to retire from Brook USA. When I took the job, I told them, you'll have me for 10 years. So here we are at year 5. So at least 5 more. But nowadays we have to retire later. So it will probably be 10 more.
10 more.
But it's about my career and mission. I think that what we really, really want to do is expand this organization and grow it, so that we can help more and more and more people and animals. Let's keep in mind that there's 600 million people in the world who depend on 100 million working equines. Mm. And we're only scratching the surface with about 2 million.
Right.
So the work is there. There's so much more to do. So I want to see those numbers raise and do more.
Definitely. So what do you see in the future for Brook USA?
You know, I think that Brook USA has an amazing future. There's extraordinary people in the equestrian world who want to help us. There's a ton of people that once they understand what we do in terms of humans, I think will jump on board. Honestly, the pandemic did set us a little bit back, and it's been a little bit worrisome. But the good news is we've given out more money this year to other organizations than we ever had, which is exciting. So I think growth is what you'll see. So I'm excited about that.
I would think so. So if you were going to give 3 points to anyone who might be listening, 3 things you would ask supporters, what would you ask of them to either do or say or whatever?
So I think that we ask our donors and our supporters for so much all the time that I wouldn't ask them for anything else, but to support the power of one campaign, which is a small thing to do, but will have a great impact. Because our donors and friends and volunteers and advocates, and you're one of those, they give their talent, time, treasure, and are truly amazing. The only thing I can say is that we thank you all for keeping our cause in your minds and for helping working equines and putting them at the forefront of your thoughts. And just be sure to tell others about us. That's what's important. I think that if I was to ask for anything in particular, it would be, yes, donate to the power of one, but also be sure to tell others about what we do. And to that, just look at our website, you know, www.brookusa.org gives you all the information you need to know. And it has my phone number there. It has Kendall's phone number there and Amanda's phone number. Just pick up the phone and call us.
Yes. Well, and the website's amazing. I mean, there's so much information and so many different avenues to go down. So it's a wonderful website. And I'm going to ask one last question. Because in every single interview, when your name comes up, they say, and I kid you not, she's a force of nature. So what is your response to that?
I'm not sure that's good or bad. How about
no, I think it's the most amazing compliment I've ever heard. So what's your reaction?
I think they're telling you I'm a pushy broad. That's what they're telling you. No, I think what it means, to be honest with you, is, you know, we have a yearly plan in fundraising and we have a year, 3-year strategic plan. And what I do at all points when I meet with our board members and I meet with our ambassadors is remind them of the commitments that we made towards meeting those goals in the strategic plan. So I think that force of nature means also I'm a nag, but I'll take it.
But your passion comes through in everything you do. And I think that's the emphasis to me.
And Julianne, there is no other organization that I can think of right now and is even out of the equestrian world that can help both humans and animals alike. And this is an extraordinary cause. So we want more people to get involved and learn about us. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I think you've said enough right there. I think you have said it all. So thank you so much, Emily, for everything that you've done, for sitting down and talking with me today and spending 45 minutes, you know, having a conversation when I know there are a lot of things you could be doing, but it has helped a lot in understanding your reasons behind what you do. And I think it's pretty special.
Well, thank you.
If you'd like to support Brook USA and help this work continue, you can donate by texting ORANGE to 71760.